Okay, for our next speaker, Johnny O from Five Cities.
Thank you. Johnny Alcoholic.
Johnny!
And from the Five Cities Group. I joined that group in October 1982, and I've been with that group ever since. I'm very grateful to still be at the They're the only ones that ever asked me to come back. I couldn't even go to the bars where I lived. So, you know, to be here, it's a great honor to be here with a man like Victor. It really is. I've known Victor for a lot of years, and I can't hardly mention Victor without mentioning Cal. Cal is the one that introduced me to Victor at the, and I met Cal at the Boy Scout camp, men's stag camp out, many, many, many years ago. And so went through his demise, and that was a horrible thing. I remember up there driving up and down that river creek, trying to find, and hoping I didn't find him. And you know, and that was a sad time for all of us. Cal had just moved from Santa Maria down there, and the first thing he did is came into our steering committee meeting and wanted a job. So they nominated and voted him in as our vice chair of the group. And then he didn't even get to make one meeting. So, but he was willing. You know, he showed me the willingness that it takes to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I learned from that, learned from Pat. Pat was at my very first meeting when I walked into Ray Grande. And a few days later, I moved over. I took a ride with old Roger and Kathy and ended up at the Five Cities Group. And Fast Eddie was outside running around, and he said, come on in here, because I was getting ready to kind of back out the door and go back to where I already had a comfort zone. I'd been there 3 days, and Eddie come running out and gave me a cup of coffee and said, sit down, and we need you here. And so I did. I sat down. And you know, Fast Eddie just died here a couple of years ago in Tascadero. He died with 43 years sober. And so I came down here in 1982, and my sponsor was here, Davy Jones, and he was the manager here of the club. So I came right here and sat right there with him. I don't know how many times. Listening to him share and asking me, are you willing to take the consequences? You can do anything you want. Then he said, let's discuss consequences. And he said, I already know your life story, so can you go back and do another 7 years in jail? No, can't even do a night in jail anymore. And he said, well, let's discuss that. So I had never sat down. My whole life has been clamming up. You hide everything that's going on in your life. You never share anything about yourself or your family. And that's my dad was real, real strict on that. And the same as in the jails and the people that I actually hung out with. He just didn't talk about anything. And you showed no fear, even though you had so much fear you couldn't function. That I didn't know until after I got sober. I had no idea until I got into that fourth and fifth step and that I had any fears at all. And then I started looking at it. Yeah, I was a fighter. I fought all over. I had the highest 5 fights a night. And that was because of my anger and resentment mostly. I went back and to Ray Grande Bars there, and I started finding these guys that were laughing at me when I was a kid and grammar school, and here I had gotten big and I had gotten tough and I got my revenge on all of them. And what I found is it didn't help. It didn't help at all to get that revenge, but I couldn't stop. I kept remembering them because at that time I was the Yoki boy that had the homemade shirts and we came from Oklahoma, and I was born in Arizona. Yeah, on the, we were like the Trail of Tears back then, so that we lived on the river banks and worked out in the fields for many years, and that's how we came here. So I held resentments. My brother didn't seem to bother them at all. I had three brothers and a sister, and they went through life totally different than I did. I mean, I would get these resentments and start looking for people. Later, when I started drinking in the bars, and then I remember him, he would get mad, and they would have a debate, an argument. And within 5 minutes, he's hugging them and talking and laughing and carrying on. Me, I'm ready to go kill that guy because of him, you know. And I did that a couple of times. I hurt people because of my older brother. That's how I got that scar right there. My older brother, he got into an argument with some Marines in a house party. And he wasn't a fighter. He was backing off. And I jumped up, and then one guy threw a beer bottle and broke it right there. So I still got the dent there to remember that. One of the consequences, that's what you get when you live like that. So a lot of things I can remember now. I was sent to Alcoholics Anonymous from 1964 to 1982. By the courts, and happened to be the Five Cities group, as that was the only group that was going on in the Five Cities area through those years until they started making the splits. But when I first came in, I had never remembered ever being at an AA meeting. I didn't even know I'd ever been to AA. So I had never opened a book. I never even knew what a big book was. When I went to meetings, I shut down. I wanted that court card signed. And we had guys like Larry Ramey that would say, "I'll sign your card. You don't even have to go in there." But there was a big guy that came in the meetings, and he was always sitting there, and he was a probation officer. So I knew that guy was there watching us. So I would come and sit there, and then long time down the road, sitting there, and he stood up and started sharing. He was an alcoholic and been sober for many years. So I thought he was there watchdogging for that judge that always put me in jail and stuff. And I remember a judge calling me up in the front, and he called me by my first name. Told me to come up here. Then he asked the gal, "What's he in here for? What? Why are you here? You were just here last week." So I started naming these charges, and she said, "No, that's not the charges. That's the charges you had before. Since you bailed out, you've got all these other charges now." So I had those charges on top of the other charges. And I remember telling the judge, "Well, I got to get a lawyer. I don't have any money." And he said, "You're making a mockery out of my court." So he got real tired of messing with me. So I figured out how to be my own lawyer. And to do that, you have to go down to Crow's Nest. And at break time, you have to have a few shots and come back. So I went down there for lunch one day, and I stayed too long in there. Came back, and the judge looked at me, and he said, "Come up here." And So I got close to him and he smelled my breath and he told the two bailiffs, put him in the jury box, take him back to jail. And so he revoked my bail, put me back in jail. So I had another charge and I had to come back and go through all that stuff. So it gets scary when you have blackouts because you don't remember why you're in them. And so I'm talking all this stuff and I'm not even there for that. I'm there for other charges. So this went on weekly. I don't know how I kept a job at the refinery. I was out there for 25 years. And the only reason is when they would have shutdowns, turnarounds, that I could seem to stay sober because we worked 18 to 20 hours a day. I even slept out there on a table like these and sleep a while and back to work. And the bosses liked me because I got the job done when I was out there. Coming here this time, it's been way different for me. I really have. I took the steps right away, nonstop, like the book talks about. I detoxed. I went up to the mountains in Colorado, in the Rocky Mountains, and I detoxed in 10 days. And I came out of that, and I had two guys, one with 38 years and one with 27 years, that were big book thumpers. And these guys asked me, you want this deal or not? And I said, yeah, that's why I'm here. And they said, if you don't want it, get on down the road and hitchhike back to California because you don't have a ticket. They didn't give you a round trip ticket. So I told them I want this thing and I'm staying. And they said, okay. And they both opened up their books and sat down and we started going through the set of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I can tell you, I don't know why it takes somebody 8 months to take a first step. It didn't take me very long. After talking with them and going over my story, and I remember the one guy with 27 years, he said, you've never had a defense against first drink. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you've never had a defense. I've listened to you for 15 minutes here, and you do not have a power greater than yourself. Your power is alcohol, and that stopped working for you. So if you don't find this power greater than yourself, you're not going to stay here very long. And so these steps are going to lead you to that power. And so I became more willing then. I don't know if Victor was talking about that. That word scared me because, I used to watch TV and I'd see that one with Charlton Heston come down carrying his big thing and he'd seen a burning bush. And I remember I'd go outside and look, okay, take me, waiting for the burning bush. And no bush, so I went back and had another drink. So it never did come, and I never searched. I never did anything that it would take. I never seemed to fit in church, you know, wearing my homemade shirts and all that. I just, people there were all dressed up nice, and I just didn't ever seem to fit in church. So only time I've been to church now is myself is to go to AA meeting, and I've been to many of those, mostly speakers meetings, and so we're everywhere. That I found out. I've traveled around the country in sobriety, and I traveled Arizona an awful lot, Sedona area, and Cottonwood, and all out through there, Prescott. And my mom lived in Cottonwood, and so I was able to take my old motorhome and go over there and camp out and just stay there and go to a lot of meetings and met a lot of really good people. And then I got hooked into Sedona and into the vortexes there, and I started getting sucked into the mountains there. I really did. Got a real strong draw there. And I remember sitting there and people would tell me, when you get that, you got to back out of there and go. And I was kind of liking that feeling. So I would just kind of stay as long as I could. And later on, I went to, with my family, and we had the celebration of life there for my sister. She had passed there. She lived there in Sedona. And so we had the celebration at Bell Rock. And then my granddaughter and the rest of my nieces were able to take her ashes and spread them all over the mountain. And so she's there, and that's why that place is, really, really a sacred place for me to go back to feel her presence there when I go. I remember that day when we had the celebration of life, my mom was there, and I remember looking up, and there was like three feathers in clouds, and there were formation of feathers. And I remember I took pictures of that. I have no idea where they are now. But so, I've never felt things like I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been searching for this power through the years. Eddie scared me, Fast Eddie, at first. He said, I spent 10 years running to the mountaintop, running to the ocean, searching for this God. And I was thinking, oh my God, 10 years to do that? And then he said, I found him after 10 years in here. And that made sense to me. So we take that St. Francis prayer and go to the beach and sit in my car, roll down the window, and I would say that prayer and listen and look out. And I would think, no human could have made that ocean like that. And so I could hear the power and feel it. And so I did that an awful lot in early sobriety. It really did. And it seemed to help me and give me a little more strength and to keep on this journey. So I've stayed very active in Alcoholics Anonymous every day. I didn't take any weekends off or holidays. And I'm grateful. That's the way I was taught, that you have a day to reprieve, but it's a contingent on the maintenance of your spiritual condition. That means you have to do certain things, and that means you can't be hitting people. Got to learn how to keep your anger down. And Dave Jones used to tell me, you're going to learn that by praying. Sit down, be quiet, take your time, pray and meditate. You'll hear your answers in meditation. And he said, and then you have to follow that. So I found what happened to me is it worked. And one story I read in the back of the book, I think Freedom from Bondage, talks about praying for them for 2 weeks and see if that works. Pray for good things. And you're talking about an enemy that wanted to kill you, and you're praying for his good stuff. So that was all a learning. Miss Gail was one of our old timers in our group, and she was talking about her husband, ex-husband, and she said her sponsor had told her, well, if you can't get over him, pray for him. Pray for him for 2 weeks. She said, so I prayed for the some bitch. And he died, so I've been... she said, I've been a a strong believer in prayer every time. She said that while her daughter was sitting in the room. Her daughter Mary's got 30-something years now, sober. She was a young girl when I came in, and she would come into meetings and listen and back out drinking and partying until the day came that she came in and stayed. So I've gotten to watch a lot of people come and stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been to several funerals by people that didn't stay. Maybe they didn't take this serious enough. So I'm real grateful that I made Alcoholics Anonymous my way of life. I call it a design for living. And what I found is this design fit my life. Opposite of anything I had ever done in my life. My thinking got changed here. Do I look back now and all the stuff that I had done and went through? It's hard to believe it's the same guy. Almost 39 years later, to look by there, and it wasn't because I was young and reckless. I was an alcoholic, completely wacko. And that was what I did is I looked back and I was progressing through all those years. I never knew anything about progression, and I didn't know anything about blackouts. What I found is you don't go to Bakersfield and go to jail, come home, and not know about it. I was arrested here, taken to San Luis Jail, and I had no idea what charges they had on me. And they said, well, we arrested you because there's a warrant from Bakersfield. I said, for what? I haven't been to Bakersfield in years. Oh yeah, you were over there, you got drunk. You went to jail, you bailed out, and then you didn't show up in court. I said, why would I show up in court when I haven't been there? So I was gonna try and prove, get a lawyer and prove I wasn't there. There's my signature on the ticket and all that stuff. But you know, I had no idea you could go to that where you can actually, like I am right now, and somebody walk up here tell you this is last Friday. And I'm like, what? And they said, yeah. You've been running around with these people for 2 weeks. You went to Bakersfield, you went to LA, and I said, I don't even like these people. I don't even know who they are, but I don't like them anyway. And they said, well, you've been hanging out with them. I like that. So this building here brings back a lot of good memories. I remember when this was Old Timers Row with a table from here all the way down. And I remember coming in and thinking, man, these guys are all old and the ladies. And I was thinking, I'll never get that. They just had me come down after the first 2 years. About every 2 years I could come down and share. And so this holds a real good spot in my life here in this group. So if you're new here, I hope you keep coming back. And like Victor was talking about, your best insurance is going to be working with other people. I found out that's my savior. This is not my gig of sitting around and going to speakers and doing all that stuff. Mine is sitting on a sidewalk with a newcomer and sharing what I know about Alcoholics Anonymous with them. Theirs where my comfort zone is. Sharing at a podium, especially the big ones where you go to conventions and they ask you to share stuff there. I've just never been real comfortable doing that myself. Kind of like being an executive. You know, I worked for that refinery for a lot of years, and then after I got sober, I ended up the superintendent of the job they were firing me on when I went in and told them that that I was going to find help. I found out later that my boss, which was a supervisor, was on the phone with the owner of the company, and the owner was telling him to get rid of me because I became not so good of an employee anymore. So here down the road, they had moved my supervisor to back up north, and they came and found me and asked me to take over that position. So I remember things were wonderful. Here I was, I had a new granddaughter. Never thought I would ever have one. I'd settle for puppies and kittens. And my daughter told me she was pregnant, and so I had my granddaughter, and I had my job. Finally, after all those years, here I was, the head of the maintenance company and at the refinery, and I had an eighth grade education, and so things got real, real tough when I had to start going to these meetings with the real bigwigs and the real smart people. They liked me because of my work and not my education. So they never even looked into my education. And so I was real fortunate. I had a secretary that was real sharp, and she did everything for me. She wrote letters. Then they had me fire her. Dad, I remember sitting there, so now what, you know? Because I was supposed to make out these reports and send them in every day and all that stuff. And I went, celebrated all that. I was excited. 5 years later, I went into the job to thinking I was getting another promotion or a raise of some sort because we had done well with the turnarounds. I knew how to hired a lot of people right out of here. I thought he flew in because he was there the week before, president of one of our district. And he said, we're gonna go down and have lunch at a bar down there. And I remember going in, sitting, and I'm waiting to hear all this news, you know? He said, we're gonna cut you loose. I was like, what? And after 25 years, I had been there many years longer than he had for the company. I was actually longer than the owner at that time of that had taken over the company. And so we're sitting in a bar, and he's telling me, we're gonna put this younger guy in, we're gonna go back to refinery. You're gonna to give him your truck keys, and then you're all done. Dad, I remember that feeling after all those years, finally making supervisor. I never did really fit in the supervisor role. So it was a hassle going to work every day. I like being with the men like I do here. I like being with the people. So I had to go home and tell my wife that they had let me go. It was the hard part too, was the guy that they put in my job drove my company truck and drove me home and dropped me off in the yard. So I had to just get out of there, and that's just when you're talking about no anger. Just get out. It's already done. Let's go. And then run straight to the AA meeting and find guys like Larry Ramey and Dave Christie and all these to let them know what's going on with me. I just lost that job, and I didn't know what I was going to do. My back was messed up then, so I was in really bad shape and couldn't just go get another job anywhere. I'd have been in the hospital 3 times with that back then. And But you know, each day, I remember just walking. And they had a guy named Cliff. Some of you guys might know him. He had one leg, crutches, rode a Harley. He had a hole in one. I think he had two of those golfing. He won the World's Tournament in Reno playing pool. And this guy was just phenomenal. And he had 200-300 games bowling. And so here I was trying to talk with him, and he would tell me, keep up. And I was trying to keep up with him. My back was so messed up, and I'm doing all this. Keep up, keep talking, just keep up. And so he did that almost every day. And later on, I found that my outlet happened to be thrift stores, so I would go in there, and I had all these thrift store clothes. And my wife would throw them out as I would bring them in. So I was married and had two kids at 17 years old in juvenile hall. So I met her first day of high school in 1959 out front of the high school and in front of a yard there. She was with one of my friends. We had just moved back from Wheat Patch, California. And so I met her out there, and she was a beautiful Native American Chumash girl. And I remember looking at her, and he introduced me as his girlfriend and all this. And I was sitting there looking at her thinking, not for long. Next week, she was my girlfriend. So we were together for many, many, many years, 62 years. We've been separated for several years now, and she passed away last June 2nd. And so life goes on. You know, there's a bond there that's never been broken, but life still goes on. So if you're new, I hope you keep coming back and expect things to happen. Things are supposed to happen. We have a solution. So I'm glad to be here, and thank you, Victor, for calling me.
All right, let's give it up for Victor and Johnny one more time. Thank you.